This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are my intellectual property lawyers, and they should be yours. You can go to my Facebook page, Radio-Joy on Paper, and find a link to them. Bill Larson, who is our own private legal eagle here at Joy on Paper, will always be ready to help you with your legal questions. So just go to my Facebook page. And while you're there, like me because I like you. As a matter of fact, I like everybody today. I'm in a really good mood. I'm so happy today to be able to have as a guest on Joy on Paper someone who I admire so very much and who has brought tears to my eyes because I have cried many times watching this wonderful, wonderful performer. Sonia Richards-Ross is, of course, a gold medal winner for the 400 meters final in the 2012 Olympics. Sonia, it is so wonderful to have you on the program today.
Oh, it's such my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, as I said, you have brought tears to my eyes so many times. When I look back at that 2012 Olympics and just watching you, and of course knowing that how important it was that you win this race, and you know, I love watching track. I could never run myself, but I love watching it. My sister is a great enthusiast, and so she knows all about track, and she just follows it so much. And just seeing you when you won that race and when you took the American flag and you held it up behind you, tears were pouring down my eyes.
That means so much to me because, you know, that was such a special victory for me. I had wanted to be an Olympic gold medalist since I was 9 years old, and to finally live that moment and to share it with the world and my family and the country, it was just so special. So that means a lot to me that it made you feel the same way I felt.
Oh, I tear up even just thinking about it because it was such a wonderful moment. Of course, you were running next to a Russian, which was also nice.
Yes.
Yeah, there's something nice about beating the Russian, but it was just so wonderful in the way, and you won with such grace and charm and pure joy. I mean, when, you know, the joy is a word that I really love, and I can see it in people. I can see it in their writing, and I can see it when they win things. And wow, you just had that joy. But of course, you have, I think, you know, it's so wonderful. I was so happy that Zonderkid sent me your book because they publish such wonderful books, and they're so often inspiring. And your book is particularly inspiring. Of course, it's
Thank
called
you.
Run With Me, Sonia Richards-Ross, and it's a story of a U.S. Olympic champion, which you are, and,
Thank
you know,
you.
It's just so amazing. We were all heartbroken, of course, when you lost in 2008, but even then, you lost with grace, and you were a champion.
Thank you.
You know, you can be a champion in losing, too, because, you know, sometimes some of these people, when they lose, they just look, you know, so bitter, and yet there's something in you that's, I think, very special.
Thanks, Patsy. Thank you so much.
And, well, I think part of it, of course, is your family. Tell us
Yes.
a little bit about your family, because they are, you know, we hear so often about athletes and the, you know, the terrible family, or like there might be a mother or there might be a father who pushes them and who's
Right.
hard on them and miserable, and
Yes.
I'm, you know, I've seen that in my own personal life. I homeschooled my kids, and they were in other kind of competitions, not sports, but other competitions. And I could see that in sometimes we'd go to these things, and the parents would be really pushy and mean. And And I never could do that because I wanted them to have fun with whatever they did. And I just see that in, of course, in this book you talk about your family. So tell us a little bit about them.
Sure. You know, like you say, Patsy, I was very, very fortunate to have amazing parents and tremendous family support. And I think what separated me from a lot of people was that my parents, even though my mom ran track in high school and my dad was a phenomenal soccer player, they never forced me. They were always just one step behind me. And the more I wanted to do it was the more my dad got into it and got educated. And my mom was my first gym instructor and helped me to figure out how to start lifting weights. But it always just felt like support that came from a loving place and never like they were trying to live their dreams through me. So, you know, I could speak on my parents forever, and I get a chance to do that in the books. But, you know, they really did. They're a huge part of my success and making me always feel that, you know, win or lose, they loved me, but they were always there to support me if I wanted to become the best in the world.
And, of course, a wonderful sister. I know I have a wonderful sister. Her name's Natalie, and she supports me and helps me all the time. And, of course, your sister is fantastic.
Yes. You know, my sister and I are 15 months apart, and we're best friends. And, you know, she was always my loudest supporter and the person who kind of bolstered me up and made me always feel very confident. And, you know, she's still like that today. So, yeah, it's just, you know, I was very fortunate to have really, really good people around me.
Well, you know, of course, most people know the story of that you came from Jamaica. Of course, you were born in Jamaica, and you started running as a child on dirt tracks. There's something about they must feed you something really good in Jamaica that makes all of these wonderful athletes, these runners.
That's right.
What is it? It's a, I don't know. It's a, they should bottle it. I can tell you.
I know. Well, I think you know it's funny because track and field is the most popular sport in Jamaica. So I think for many reasons, one, it attracts the best athletes. And then we start at a really young age with really good coaches. So I remember when I came, when I migrated to the United States at 12 and I was in middle school for a year, you know, I was so far ahead of the kid. I mean, most of the kids that were running track might have started running that year or, you know, had 1 or 2 years. And I've been running since I was 7 with intense training and, you know, world-class coaches. So I also think that gave me a little bit of an edge when I first moved here. And then, of course, I got to work with some of the best coaches in the world in the United States as well. So I always say I got the best of both worlds.
Well, the wonderful thing about you is that your life hasn't just been track. You have done so much more. Even as a child, you were doing other things, which I think, you know, that's one of the terrible things about if you are in a sport where it takes over your entire life and you don't you don't go to school or you don't have an education, you don't, you know, join other types of groups, but you did.
And that was always important to my dad. My dad always said to me, you never want to be one-dimensional. And I think even as a young person who, you know, when I was young, track did consume my life. I loved it. I couldn't wait to go to practice. I had all these big goals for myself. But I think my dad always knew, you know, I wouldn't be able to run forever. So it was important for me to try other things, to become passionate about other things. I maintained a 4.0 GPA while I was in high school, 3.5 at the University of Texas. So, yeah, for me, there was always, like, this desire to be good at everything that I did to give myself options after track and field to be able to move on.
Well, of course, one of the things that has been a center to your life, of course, is your religion. And I always thought it was so cute that where did you go on your first date and then the next day? Tell everyone about this.
Yes, about so it's amazing. So my husband and I met in the cafeteria at the University of Texas. And we actually went out to dinner on our first date, but our second date was to church. And that's when I knew he was the one for me. He has a strong faith and has great connection with his family. And, you know, those two things are super important to me. So, yeah, when we went to church together on our second date, I thought, yeah, this is the right guy for me.
I think he's a keeper.
Yes.
You say, okay, you know, somebody comes along in your life and he takes you to church the next day. I think that's wonderful. And, of course, in himself. He is a star and a fantastic athlete.
Yes.
And, you know, it's just wonderful what the two of you have done together.
Thank you.
I know that, you know, both of you are so involved in doing good works and
yes.
And in promoting faith and trying to bring people to an understanding that God has an important place in your life.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about some of the things that you like to do to meet children, to encourage them to do well in life.
Absolutely. I mean, I've always, since I guess it's been years, every chance that I get, I take the opportunity to go and speak in high schools or speak in middle schools. I actually started a program in 2006 called the Sanya Fast Track Program, and my first program was in Kingston, Jamaica, and it was a literacy program where we helped young people learn to read on their age group level, because many of the kids were falling behind, and we found really creative ways to incorporate sports and healthy lifestyles, and we helped over 700 kids learn to read on their grade level. So that was one of the most rewarding things that I've done in my career. I've also been a part of USA Track and Field's Win with Integrity program, where we toured all around the country talking to young people about the importance of living life the right way and making the right choices, not taking shortcuts. And so that's been important to me, too. I recently started a Prom Glam program here in Austin. It's a Prom Glam empowerment program. So we go to one of the schools where many of the kids are, you know, not in the best circumstances, and we do a vision board session, we do a community outreach, and then we do the Prom Glam. And I think it's just amazing to see young girls and young guys how, you know, it's definitely not about outward beauty, but there's something that makes people feel so good when they're pampered, they feel cared about, you know, their shoulders go back, their chest pokes out a little bit, and it's just great to see that as well. So as much as my husband and I can, I've had sports clinics all over the country. And so we just do everything that we can. Now that we're not competing, that we're retired, we've been finding new ways to be connected in the community. And hopefully this book, Run With Me, will reach more kids than I can physically reach and inspire them to reach for their goals and be the best that they can be.
Well, I think Zonder Kids, they always do a wonderful job with books, with the publication. They've done a beautiful the entire layout is wonderful.
I love it too.
Isn't it? It's very well written. You've done a great
Thank
job
you.
In the writing.
Thank you.
You make it very readable, and we really want to know your story as we're reading. And I love the little inserts where they have, you know, they have some facts and what
exactly.
Sanya said. I think this is a type of book that, you know, kids can really relate to, because I've always discovered that, with young readers, if you have these little blocks, this is very clever because they do tend to read them. Then, you know, it's
right.
Like okay, something's in that little square.
Something's
there.
Happening.
Yeah, and I have to read it. And as a matter of fact, then I think they tend to go after they read the entire book. They tend to go back and read those. And
right.
So I thought it was very clever where they had. Well, I love the best first date ever. Of course, I just love. I mean, I read that twice because I. No, I think I read it three times because I thought, well, first of all, I mean, she sees Aaron Ross, and, you know, like, what a hunk, you know, and then to discover that first date was so wonderful. But I love all of them. And the inside track where you talk about some of the things that kids who are interested in, who might become interested in racing and don't know too much about it, I think we'll find those, that like the inside track things that you talk about, very interesting.
Yes, and I think that's what we tried to do. I wanted to make the book fun. I wanted it to be, of course, a little bit about my story, my ups and downs, but also educational. And I think we found that perfect blend for young people to learn something, but ultimately be inspired. And there's faith sprinkled in there, too. So hopefully they're curious about that, or, you know, that also, too, sparks their interest, and they understand that should also be a vital part in their life as well.
Well, it is, you know, that what I like, as I said, because of these little blocks of information that are different on different subjects. Even you even talk about diet and what your dad.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Thank you. Yeah, and it's funny because it does take a village. It does take a team of support. And my dad used to love juicing my fruits and vegetables for me. He would always say we get our strength from the earth. And so that taught me a lot about nutrition and diet and the importance of making sure that my diet was colorful and, you know, that I was always eating things in moderation. And so, yeah, you know, he was a huge part of helping with that. And I think it's important for young people to learn about diet as early as possible, because the sooner you know and the better your habits are when you're younger, the better chances you have when you're older to maintain them.
And I can see, you know, kids will read this book and they say, okay, a rainbow colored juice, what is that? You know, but then and to think the mix of spinach and beets and oranges and ginger, and that it can all be, you know, it tastes good.
Yes,
and I hope that
really
inspires
good for you.
It's good for you. And I thought that was so, and I think having these little things like about your dad shows the love that you have for him. And I think that is also inspiring for kids to know that somebody, you know, important and famous still has this warmth and this, she shares this joy with her father. I think it's delightful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah. And I think that, like you said, it's very important for young people, because I think sometimes as you get older, you think, oh, you want to push away from your parents. But man, my parents have been such an integral part of my career, even now, and I'm so grateful for them. So you don't want to push away from them. You want to push into your parents if you can, you know, because they're always going to love you and have your best interest at heart.
Exactly. And so much, of course, comes from your faith. And I love all the scriptures that you put here. I think, again, these are inspiring, and I hope that the children, when they read the book, they stop and think, okay, you know, it's here. There's something here in the Bible. And when you have these quotes, I hope that it draws them into actually going to their family Bible and reading more.
Absolutely. That's my hope as well.
Well, I am just so honored to talk to you, and I'm so thrilled to be able to really promote this book. I know I'm going to be talking to quite a few readers groups and children's groups this summer, and I want to, you know, just promote this book for you, because Run With Me is an inspirational book. It's just also a very good read. It's one of these books that you read, you start, and you just want to go through it and read it and then go back to it, because it is inspiring.
Thank you so much. Thank you. It's just such a pleasure to talk with you, and I really, really appreciate your support.
Well, Sonia, I'm so, as I said, I'm so honored, and I just think about you all the time when I think of Olympics, because it is important that we have people that we can admire, and we certainly, everyone who has seen you in action admires you, and now that we know that you're out there doing so much good for people, and that's so important. And you know, instead of getting yourself into gossip columns and all of that bad stuff that so happens to so often to athletes, that you're doing really the Lord's work and being strong for your family and for your country.
Thank you, Patsy. You made my morning.
Okay. Well, I'm glad. And as I said, thank you again for being on my program. It was a joy for me to talk to you here on Joy on Paper.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then I'm coming back with somebody really interesting. We will be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I stayed up all night reading this book. We can say that on your behalf to media and tastemakers, but it would be silly for you to brag on your own book. When you need a champion in your corner promoting your work, JKS Communications is with you every step of the way. We take care of the details of promoting you and your book so that you can spend your time and energy focusing on what you do best. Radio and TV interviews, newspaper features, book tours, social media, video. You can do it all, and we're here to make it happen. In 12 years, we've helped more than 700 authors and 1,200 books find their fan base. Everyone at JKS Communications loves what we do, and it shows in our enthusiasm. We're going to make a great team with you. Check us out at jkscommunications.com.
Are you an author? an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with the Z. Welcome back to Joy on Paper. And I have a very special guest.
Well, my guest is someone who has won two Edgar Awards, but I am telling you he could win the Nobel Prize for Literature, and it would not impress me as much as the fact that he is Michigan Author Award winner. Because I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Steve Hamilton. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Patsy. I don't know about the Nobel Prize, but thank you.
Well, you've got so many prizes coming up in your future. I know that you're going to win one after another, but that Michigan Author Award means more to me than anything because, of course, you were born in Detroit, and I am a Youper, as I told you last time you were on, which was exactly a year ago. I am a Youper, and so your books have a special place in my heart. Because, of course, you write these fantastic, fantastic books that are set in Paradise, Michigan. And of course, they all feature Alex McKnight. And I just love these books. One of them, which is called Misery Bay, it's very funny. I was born like 15 minutes as the crow flies from Misery Bay.
Wow, really?
Oh, and I spent many, many happy summers. We had, we lived in Berega. I was born in Berega.
Right.
You've been there, I'm sure. And we have a prison there now. But in those days, we didn't have a prison, so our population was only 1,200 people. But of course, for us, that was a big city. So we had to have a camp, a place to get away from the city. So we had a camp right there just north of Misery Bay. And we spent all our summers there in this camp, which was basically like a big shack where all the cousins could come and we all slept there, I think in one room, and we had the most glorious summers there on Misery Bay.
That's as a crime writer, of course, when I found Misery Bay, I drove down that long road to the end, to the dead end, and I stood there and I said, what's the worst thing that could happen here? Which is a little different way to think of things, but it is a beautiful place. I mean, I'm sure in the summer it is.
Oh, it's.
I was there, and there was still a lot of snow on the ground. It's a little different thing now.
Oh yeah, it's different. In the summer, it's absolutely glorious there. And I one year I got the worst sunburn of my life right there on Misery Bay because people don't understand that on the west side there of the in the Upper Peninsula we have the beautiful long beaches of beautiful sand,
right.
It's just glorious.
It is, and I guess Misery Bay for you was a bad sunburn. So,
but
that was the misery.
That was the only misery I had there, because we had the best wild raspberries in the world there along the shoreline. So it was fantastic.
Oh right, oh yeah.
And I think all of us, anyone who comes, any Youper, of course, appreciate your writing, because you always make us, you don't make fun. Make fun of us like some of these people.
No, of course not. No,
because you've recognized that we are probably the most intelligent and gorgeous people in the world. And,
exactly.
And
you,
that
you may drink more than other people, but that's fine.
Then why not? Between coffee and beer, we balance it out.
That's right.
You have a little too much beer, you need some coffee, and we do drink a lot of coffee. So it's just so exciting to have you on today to talk about your latest book. I mean, it's 1 year ago, we were here talking about, of course, The Second Life of Nick Mason, which is, as I understand, soon to be a major motion picture.
Yes, it is.
Wow. At the time, I knew that it would be because it is so, it just reads so well. You know, I'm a script writer. So I always, when I read a book, I always think of it in terms of, could I make this into a movie?
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, that's a real special skill to be able to do that.
Well, it is, you know, and I have three scripts in turnaround in Hollywood, as we say, in turnaround. They can turn around and around and around for
years. I know what that means. Exactly.
I mean, they can be like, they can start like a little snowball and they keep turning and turning. And finally, you know, we have a gigantic snowball they've turned around so many times. But so I think once you deal with Hollywood, you know that these things happen.
It is a world of its own, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, which is why I am now on the west coast of Florida instead of the west coast out there, because you can't take it. It ruins your nerves. But now we're going to have Nick Mason on the big screen. And now the new book, the second book, Exit Strategy. Wow. You know, I had David Baldacci on a few weeks ago, and I said, you know, I love books that start off with a bang, and his first chapter starts off with a bang. But your first chapter starts off with a bang, 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 bang. I mean, like...
There you go, yeah.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, and this series is set in Chicago, actually. The Nick Mason, I mean, Alex McKnight was... Detroit and the UP, Nick Mason is Chicago, and it's funny that you talk about that first scene, because I'm actually in Chicago right now, and I'm literally sitting in a hotel across the street from where that first scene in this book takes place. So I'm looking out the window at exactly where that happened, and I had no idea that I'd be sitting here, but so I think it was meant to be.
It was meant to be, because that is an opening chapter that blows. I'm giving a little hint to all the listeners out there. It blows your mind. I mean, really, and it's nonstop. I mean, it's one after another, and I'm thinking you almost. I think as I'm reading, I'm holding my breath, and by the time I finish that first chapter, I'm saying, "Whoa, I got through it, and I survived it." It's great.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you do. You have a wonderful way of writing. You do. You have this ability to. We talk about pacing. I mean, I don't know how much time you spend on actually going back, you know, thinking as you're writing, I'm pacing this. I have to pace this, because you just move. It's fantastic.
Well, the great Elmore Leonard. It's funny that you mentioned the Michigan Writing Award. That was one of the best honors about that, was that he also won a Michigan Writing Award at one point. So just to be mentioned in the same breath with him in any context is quite an honor. But he has these great rules for writing that he developed over the years, and you can look them up online. I'd recommend them to any writer. But one of his rules was that he would always leave out the part that readers skipped. And that's a great sort of shorthand way to always remember, you know, about how important pacing is, especially in crime fiction. You want the reader to just read that first sentence and then just have to keep going, and then you just want it to go, just go, go, go. And then, you know, of course, the greatest compliment any writer can get is when a reader tells them that you ruined their next day at work because they had to stay up late, you know, finishing the book. It's, you know, it is the greatest compliment.
Well, it happens all the time when I'm reading you, because then I forget about the laundry, I forget about dishes, I forget about everything, and probably we have to order takeout, because I'm too busy. I'm not going to make any pasties when I'm reading one of your books. I don't have time to do that, and you know what a pasty is. So
I sure do.
You sure do. One of our the great delicacy of the Northern Peninsula of Michigan, the pasty is something that is absolutely special, and
it's something that the miners would take down into the mines and they could heat it up on their shovel.
That's it.
Which doesn't sound like a very appetizing, but that's how it was born.
Well, one of my uncles was, two of them were miners, and one of them actually was in one of those mine things, where he was crushed a little bit.
Cave-in? Ooh,
yeah,
cave-in.
He survived it, but it wasn't a pleasant experience. But yes, they did.
No, I imagine not.
They did take those passages. My father was he was like the youngest boy, and by the time he got to working age, he said, there's no way you're getting me in a mine. So that was not a chance. Because it was such a difficult time for these guys, but
right. They
did. They actually did take pasties, and as I said, you know, with you, just when I'm reading you now, of course, these books are set in Chicago, so you spend a lot of time in Chicago with the police, I think, there, right?
I do. Yeah, that's part of being a crime writer is so much about research and living in the world that your characters live in. So that's how I've gotten to know the city of Chicago so well, because this is where Nick Mason comes from. This is where he goes back to when he gets released from prison. Although he goes back to a whole different world in Chicago, because Chicago really is probably more than any other American city, I think, just a city of different worlds. So it just felt like this is where he would have to come from. He'd have to be a South Sider of Chicago. That's where Nick Mason is from. That's who he is. And spending so much time here, I got to know some of the police officers here. I'm friends with the homicide detective, which these days, as you can imagine, it's a pretty tough job. I've gotten to know one of the assistant U.S. attorneys here. I really didn't know much about that job at all until I started writing this book. There's a character in this book who's an AUSA, and I didn't realize how important they are to the whole process, and how all federal cases really sort of have to start with a U.S. attorney who's willing to process it and follow it.
And for this book, you even went to a high security prison, right?
I had actually for both of these books, I had made a visit to a maximum security prison. Which is obviously not going to be a fun place. Nobody would expect it to be, but I was surprised at just how strong a physical reaction I had to going there. I mean, you can walk into a maximum security prison, and you know you're going to walk out in an hour or 2 hours. Mentally, you just know that. But there's something about the place, and when the door closes behind you, there's nothing like the sound of a prison door closing. And everything is so different there. It's just the light is different, and the sounds and the smells and it's you have this reaction, this pure animal reaction, like you're in a cage. And I can't imagine what it would feel like to go into a place like that and know that you're probably never going to go out again. That would be the worst thing I can think of. And as I was starting this series, that's sort of how I started with this idea that, I mean, just imagine that you are in a place like that, and you know you're going to be there for at least 25 years, probably the rest of your life, and somebody offers you this deal that will let you walk out. And not just walk out, but, I mean, walk right into this amazing new life with a townhouse on the north side of Chicago and a restored Mustang and a beautiful roommate and $10,000 of cash at the beginning of every month. You're going to take that, especially if all you want to do is just see your family again, see your wife, and especially see your daughter. I mean, of course he's going to take that. But that whole first book was about finding out what the cost of it is, what the terrible price is for that apparent freedom, because Nick Mason lives in a world where whenever the phone rings, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he has to answer it, and then he has to go do whatever he's told to do, no matter what it is. And of course, no surprise, it's some pretty horrific stuff that he has to go do. And the first book was all about him sort of making his way in this new life, and the second book, Exit Strategy, as the title would suggest, he's really, things have gotten to the point that the stakes are just getting higher and higher. These assignments are getting more and more dangerous, and even more than that, Nick can sort of start, he's feeling himself turning into this machine, and he's losing his humanity. So he decides he just can't do it anymore, and he has to find a way out.
And that brings us to this really terrific book. I was really, as I said, holding my breath almost throughout the whole book, because I'm with the fast pacing and then wondering exactly what this exit strategy is going to be. And I was very happy at the, I won't tell anyone what happens at the end, but I was happy with the exit strategy. I was happy with the ending and knowing that there's another book coming up, because, and it's going to be
book. A lot of big surprises at the end.
Yeah, exactly. And it just reads so well. And I had somebody on, caller called me and said, well, you know, you're always saying this is one of your favorite authors. And I said, well, duh, this is my radio program. I don't have to have anybody on my program that I don't like. I mean, if I don't like their book, they're not on my radio program. But in your case, when I say that you are really one of my favorite authors, it is partly because of course, the Michigan books. I just love the Michigan books, and they always just take me home again. But when you came out with this idea of the Nick Mason, I thought it was so clever, the idea, the concept. And then now as we are following Nick and as he, you know, it was so important for him to be part of his daughter's life, to see his daughter again, and being willing to, you know, take on this role that you've created. You've done a great job.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That's a great honor. Just to be on the show, to be one of your favorite authors, and to be on the show. And you mentioned David Baldacci as one of the other writers you've had. I bet you've had some really great writers, and just to be included as one of them.
Oh, well, of course, you know, one of my very favorite is Larry Block, and you know, he's fantastic. Yeah. And so I'm just so lucky to have. I just celebrated the second anniversary of my program. And the thing is, it's so funny, I'm not on a radio station. I haven't been able to get on a radio station in the Upper Peninsula up until now. And I think pretty soon I'm going to be on a radio station up there. But people, of course, listen to me on the TuneIn and on all of those things. But it still would be a big kick to be on a...
Yeah, it would be.
You know, just because... I've got so many cousins up there. That whole area from Berga to Misery Bay probably is inhabited by my cousins, because my father came from a family of 13 brothers and sisters. So, most of them stayed up there. You know, I'm one of the few who actually is in Florida.
Right.
You know, they say, what's wrong with her? What's wrong with that girl? She went to Florida. But it's where I'm at, and I love it. But I do love that. Relatives do come down and visit you when you live in Florida.
Of course.
So that's a nice thing.
My dad lives right by Tampa, too, so I certainly know it well.
Okay, well, next time you're in Tampa, you have to pop in and come in to the studio.
I would love that.
That would be fun, because I would love to talk to you about lots of things. And one of the things I want to talk to you about is somebody very important in your life is Shane Salerno. I would love to talk to him. I have actually tried to get through to him, but, you know, once you're sort of in the Hollywood milieu, it's more difficult to get through to these people. But perhaps you could put in a good word, because
I will do that. I mean, you're right. He is literally the busiest person that I've ever met in my life. He's just a force of nature. He's working on sequels to Avatar. He's adapting Don Winslow's The Cartel for Ridley Scott. He's going to be one of the producers for the Nick Mason project as well.
And in between all of that, I don't know. He was your literary agent.
Yeah, Yeah, he is.
He's your literary. I mean, where does he have time? I mean, how many hours? You know, somehow in California, in Hollywood, they must give all of these people an extra 2 hours because
something.
They really do something. Work around the clock.
A lot of them do. You think of California as being this laid-back place, and there are parts of it are, but if you're in Hollywood or Los Angeles, but definitely Hollywood, it's just this insane place. It really is. And when I go out there, you just sort of get caught up in it, and it's just exhausting. I can't imagine living in that life all the time.
Well, if you want to stay top in Hollywood, you have to work nonstop.
You really have to, because
otherwise you're just like washed away with the waves out there in Malibu, and you disappear somewhere. But Shane, of course, did a terrific thing for you and a daring thing for you. And because, of course, this program is for writers and those who dream of writing, all the writers I talk to, you know, of course, I talk to all the best-selling authors, but I also make sure that every month I have two or three indie authors and or young authors who are just starting in the business, because it's important. They need a place, to build their platform, and I love to do that. And it's a thrill, but wow, Shane did something. Tell people what Shane did for you.
Well, quickly. All he did was, real quickly, he basically bought out my contract, because I was in a place with my old publisher, and we were just a couple months away from this was the first book. This is the Second Life of Nick Mason. It was just about to come out. It was literally like going to start printing the next day. And all these promises that we've been made about advertising, about national media, it just didn't happen. So he asked them what it would take to buy me out, and they gave him a figure, sort of, and he called their bluff and said, "Give me the bank information, I'll wire it tomorrow." And so he bought me out of the contract, and within. It was a really scary time for. I mean, this was the biggest book of my career, and I, this is really my first time. My first book as a full time writer, and I remember that night. I was just, my wife and I just laying in bed, staring at the ceiling, wondering if we just made the biggest mistake of our lives. I mean, my publisher told me flat out, "You're making the biggest mistake of your life. You just ended your career." But with the next day. With literally within 24 hours of doing that, we had offers from 10 other publishers, and we ended up signing with Putnam that night. And
they are doing a terrific job for you. They are doing
yes, they are. I mean, it really felt. I tell other writers, it felt like I had finally. I walked into a big league ballpark for the first time as a baseball player. The first day I went there, and. That was the book last summer. That was the Second Life of Nick Mason that came out last summer, and I was on your program for the first time then, and it was an amazing experience last summer, and it did. It was my first book on the print, on the New York Times bestseller print list. The top 15.
The biggie,
the big one. That was exciting. Obviously, and so this is the second book in the series in here, and I'm sitting in Chicago, and I'm about to. I'm flying to Michigan tomorrow, because I always I'm sure you can relate to this. That's where I come from. That's where I always sort of go back to begin any kind of any book tour. Even this book, which is set in Chicago, Chicago's a big part of it, which is why I'm here right now. But I'm always going to do events in Michigan too, because that's sort of where it all began for me.
Exactly, and we love you. Everybody from Michigan loves you, and I would love, I know that we have a very short time because you're on a whirlwind tour, which is fantastic what Putnam is doing for you, and I know this is going to be another of absolutely a best-selling book, but I would like to have you back on, not in a year, sometime once you finish this tour, to come back on, and let's talk more in depth about actually writing and the process, and giving my listeners some advice, because... as I said, you have become a master of pacing, and all my listeners are always interested in knowing just a little bit, getting a little bit of help so that they can be inspired. And I think you are a very inspiring writer.
Well, thank you, and I would love to come back on for that.
Okay, and put in a good word with Shane. And really, I would it would be such an honor to talk to him because I am such a great fan.
I will do that.
Okay, thank you so much for being on today. And I will be telling everybody about Steve Hamilton, Exit Strategy. It is a must read for the summer, and they will enjoy it. And you have a website. Let's just mention it quickly.
AuthorSteveHamilton.com.
AuthorSteveHamilton.com. Go to that,
Author
too.
AuthorSteveHamilton.
Okay.
You got it.
Thanks, right. Steve. Lovely
Thank
talking to you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay. I like Steve Hamilton. As I said, if you want a really good read, this book is fantastic, and I would definitely suggest that you read the one before it, because The Second Life of Nick Mason, it was one of those books where, my mind went blank. Stephen King, my goodness, how can I forget Stephen King? Stephen King, you know, he will recommend a book. All the publishers are always going to him to try to get him to read a book and give them a blurb. But it is rare where he will actually just tweet out a recommendation. And he did it in this case. And the interesting thing is The Second Life of Nick Mason was sent to Stephen King, not by the publisher, because as we now heard, boy, Steve Hamilton was having problems with his other publisher. They were not promoting his book. And so, of course, he did a very risky thing. He was right. I could see how he must have been terrified at the time, because to pull away from, he had a big publisher. It was not a small publishing company. And when he pulled away from them, he was definitely gambling for at least a 24-hour period to see if any other publisher would pick him up. Actually, five, maybe almost seven publishers tried to get him. And, of course, the one who came in with a seven-figure deal, yes, a seven-figure deal, for that book won, and that was Putnam. And now they are doing so much to promote his books. But for that first book, The Second Life of Nick Mason, no one had really pushed the book because, as you said, it was ready for printing, ready to go. And just then a tweet came in from Stephen King, and he said, "Trust Stephen King. This book is the real deal." And that really, I'm not sure if he got that tweet just before he broke with his old publisher, because Stephen King somehow got a hold of a draft copy of the book and just fell in love with it. And as I said, it is the nice thing about Steve Hamilton, when we're talking about fast pacing, sometimes, you know, a book can be, you have the slow parts and you sort of slow down. And you're thinking, should I, you know, is it going to get interesting again? Is it going to get interesting again? But in Steve Hamilton's case, you don't have to worry. It's just, it is. It moves one after another, one thing after another. And he's got great character development. And again, as I said, because he's from Michigan, he holds a special place in my heart. And I will have him back, not just to talk about his writing techniques. And one of the things, of course, that he always says is that what he does is he keeps a Lego brick next to him, next to his computer. And it's a start. And every day he tries to build on it until, you know, one Lego piece after another until he has a little house. And then he knows that the book is done. And so I really like that idea that, you know, you have a set thing that use to inspire you to keep writing every day. So I will have Steve Hamilton back on. And meanwhile, do get his book, Exit Strategy. I think you will enjoy it. Okay, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we're going to be back.
From the author of gut-wrenching novels Guns Up and Gunner's Glory, now a gut-wrenching comedy, Section 8. One fan writes, "Section 8 is inspired insanity. Johnny Clark should receive the Pulitzer Prize and his commitment papers in the same ceremony. You will laugh till it hurts." Section 8, it's 1946, and President Harry Truman has two goals in life: dump the U.S. Marine Corps and get reelected. Can he convince Congress that the Marine Corps is obsolete? He'll try, but first he wants to use them one last time. There's something he needs them to do, a little mission to China to steal something that one of his contributors need. It's dangerous, but who cares? Marines are expendable, or so he thinks. What could possibly go wrong? A lawsuit by the Vatican? An attempted assassination by a dead assassin? Flamethrower sermons? If that's not enough, there's a missing A-bomb. This book has it all, even a love story. Remember, Section 8 is only a temporary state. You Hope, written by a true American hero. You'll love this book, now available on Amazon. So get it today. Section 8 by Johnny Clark. Semper Fi.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with today's book buzz. If you are looking for a mystery that you won't be able to put down, then I have just the book for you, Almost Missed You. Every once in a while, you come across a debut novel that blows you away, and this one by Jessica Strausser is just that. It's the kind of book that has so many layers and depth that it will leave you wondering what is around the corner. It's an amazing thriller, and here is the buzz. As Violet sips a pina colada on the beach, she has no idea that her life is about to change. She will learn something about her life and those around her. All the pieces come together like a puzzle. Violet will need to face the fact that you really, really never know everything about a person, and some decisions have deadly consequences. It's a powerful story of secrets and lies. You will love Almost Missed You by Jessica Strausser. It's a hold-no-barred thriller that you won't be able to put down. Get it online today and enjoy. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. For more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, click on Book Buzz with Rita Moreau. Buzzing off for now.
If you're not sure if your book is ready to be published, you might think about trying to find somebody to review it for you, somebody to look at it and to give you pointers. One of the people I recommend is Irene Goodman. She auctions off a critique every month at the beginning of the month, on the first of every month. Irene Goodman is one of the top literary agents, and you can find out about getting involved in this critique by going to her website, IreneGoodman.com. Okay, so meanwhile, I want to thank everyone for being on today. I'm going to start right away by saying thank you to Big Ed, because you know what? Big Ed always salutes me when I say that, and I just love that, because when I, my boys, when they were young, they used to say I would be a wonderful drill instructor, and I always did like people saluting, and I wanted to be saluted, and I think that's a good idea. Maybe I'll have my guests come in and say, okay, I'm going to wear a hat, and they have to salute me. I think that's so cool. I love when Ed does that. So meanwhile, everybody, find your joy and share it and have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. Write. In a year, you'll have 365-page novels. Think about that. Or at least read a book. But hopefully it won't take you a page a day to read a book, so that you can't catch up to me, because I don't think very many people can catch up to me. I've read 10,000 books, but do try, and have a fun time.